Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Think you've seen every television network that's won sports 24/7? Our first guest thinks there's room and viewers for the Handball Channel. That's right, the Handball Channel. And that's not all, as Jack Marathi, chief executive at Parent H2O, explains when he joins me next. One of syndication's most unique weekly attractions turns 20 this month, Teen Kids News. A salute with co-executive producer Alan J. Weiss and producer Mary Lou Yacoub next half hour. And will version 3 be the charmer for a Pictionary game show? We'll start learning Monday on television stations across the United States and get a preview during our final half hour from executive producers David Hurwitz and Richard Brown, who incidentally today are actually taping episodes of the program. Also ahead, The Crown bows to Queen Elizabeth, our show to know and take away the week segments, and we remember an anchor person for all seasons, CNN's Bernard Shaw. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker and TuneIn Radio, and present on Spotify, the iRadio Podcast Network, Google Podcasts, Acast, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and other leading podcast sites. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Wherever you are on this Friday afternoon, we welcome you to our latest edition of the program all about TV's current and future. 78 degrees at the top of the hour here in New Weather. Your beautiful skies, and we expect a wonderful weekend as well. Happy year long, a lot to get to today, and a lot of people for you to hear. And the way you get involved with a question or comment for any or all of our guests is very simple. Pick up the phone and call. Use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And, of course, we've got our chat room in business for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and all you have to do is go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, to use it. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions on the TV Live with you. Jack Marathi from the Handball Channel, expect to be live with us here in the Big Apple after these news notes. Production on season 6 of Emmy-winning Netflix series The Crown continues in suspension this afternoon. The action was taken shortly after the death of Queen Elizabeth II yesterday. Netflix officials say the decision to halt filming was a mark of respect for Queen Elizabeth, a key character on The Crown, currently played by Imelda Staunton. Production is expected to resume week after next, following Great Britain's 10 days of mourning for the longest-running monarch in the nation's history. Netflix will go forward with a global debut of season 5 this November. Meanwhile, Ryan Murphy is set to premiere his latest Netflix miniseries, Crime Time dramatization The Watcher. That project, starring Naomi Watts and Bobby Cannavale, will premiere later this fall. Less than a week away from unveiling season 5 of The Handmaid's Tale, Hulu has greenlighted the 6th and final season. Greater executive producer Bruce Miller will be back to oversee the final round of episodes while developing follow-up series The Testament, again adapted from a Margaret Atwood novel. Season 5 begins on Hulu September 14th. Now some quickies. Apple TV Plus will go forward with Sinking Spring, a drama series concerning Philadelphia-based delinquents posing as DEA officers for a robbery-turned-narcotics scandal. Michael Mando and Brian Tyree Henry co-star. Alaska Bush People begins a new season October 2nd on Discovery Channel and Discovery Plus. And Paramount Plus has settled on a new title, an expanded title, for its forthcoming revival of the long-running CBS procedural Criminal Minds, Criminal Minds Evolution. And that is news notes for today. We are awaiting Jack Marathi. He is the chief executive of the new venture, the Handball Channel, and it's one of several networks that he wants to get on board for smart TV sets and devices through his enterprise, UMR Channels Group Media. We are expecting him any moment. And Jack, if you're hearing us, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And as soon as I see you're ready to go, we will put you on the air. By the way, for those of you who missed our Tuesday episode, we do not have a classic trivia question for you today. We did give you the answer on Tuesday's program, so if you missed it, here it is. It was Alan Funt who created Candid Camera. Alan Funt was the creator of Candid Camera. We'll have a brand new classic trivia question for you on Monday's episode. And when you hear it, if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, when you email, to enclose your name and your mailing address. So if you win, our 3 prizes in play, we'll be ready to go for you. That's the Nickelodeon Christmas card set from the Loud House Gang, plus 2 big books, The Unexpected Danny Green by recent TWBT guest Paul Franklin, and the wonderful book Flirting with Fame by noted entertainment public relations guru Dan Harari, also a recent guest on this program. So again, brand new question coming your way on Monday. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of Monday, we will post the question on Tuesday on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so, and all the very best. And while we wait for our first guest, Jack Marappi from the Handball Channel, he is the chief executive of that service, which expects to be on, if not already, this week. We'll be on shortly on Roku, Apple TV, and Verizon and other places. Let's go right ahead and do one of our regular features, A Show to Know, where we highlight a program that we think is worth your while or a classic program from the past that is currently playing on YouTube or elsewhere. And you might not know about it because it's not well marketed, promoted, or publicized, or it falls on the radar screen of critics and journalists. And today, we have a buried treasure for you, a series that ABC ran for one season, 1963 and 1964. It was a spinoff of the very popular medical drama Ben Casey. And it's a marvelous show with an episode that, if you're Jewish, you want to check it out on YouTube just before the High Holy Days. I think you'll find it very inspiring. The program is Breaking Point. It's about two psychologists, played by Paul Richards and Edward Franz, who deal with various cases involving mental health and mental illness. It's the gamut. The subjects run the gamut from depression to suicide pacts to homosexuality and much, much more. A number of years ago, several episodes of Breaking Point were on YouTube. Then, with the exception of one starring Robert Ryan, they were all pulled off. Well, I'm happy to say that whatever the right situation was, whatever it was, they are back, and actually more episodes now than earlier. One of the episodes that was originally pulled off, and I'm happy to say it's back, is called A Pelican in the Wilderness. It was written by Michael Blankfort, directed by Elliot Silverstein. It was the eighth episode in the series. It originally ran on November 4th, 1963 on ABC. The program stars the brilliant character actor Martin Balsam as a Jewish rabbi who has to deal with a crisis of faith, the sudden death of his only son. It is an amazing performance. Martin Balsam, by the way, in case you don't know him, is one of the great character actors of all time. Some of you may remember the film Psycho. He played the private eye who gets it from Anthony Perkins' character more than midway through the film in a very memorable sequence at the stairs of that Psycho mansion. Well, anytime Martin Balsam appears in a TV series or a movie, you know you're going to get a very good, nuanced performance. And he does so in this episode. The highlight of the episode is the final extended scene, where as the rabbi, he is facing his congregation with a sermon where he decides to finally conquer his crisis of faith. And then, after that sermon, he gives a very moving performance of one of the great prayers in Jewish literature, the Mourner's Kaddish, where during many religious services, the mourners in the congregation stand up and they pray this prayer for people in their lives who have passed on. It is a marvelously put-together scene, and Balsam delivers it like nobody else. In fact, it may be one of the only presentations of a prayer, the Mourner's Kaddish in particular, on network television. I believe it was a first at the time, and it may still be a first. And believe me, you want to see this. It is extraordinary. Balsam delivers it beautifully. He's accompanied by a marvelous musical version of the Mourner's Kaddish, produced by Richard Markowitz, a great composer. Some of you may know him as the composer of the themes for such TV hits as The Rebel and The Wild Wild West in the 50s and 60s. It is a marvelous closing scene. It's incredibly powerful, and I invite you to see it for yourself, especially if you're about to celebrate the High Holy Days. Again, the episode is called A Pelican in the Wilderness, and it's one of the marvelous episodes of this series that frankly should have gotten more than one season on ABC. The program was produced by Bing Crosby Productions, the people who did Ben Casey, that ran five seasons on ABC. It is absolutely marvelous. It was executive produced by George Lefferts, a terrific drama writer, producer, director, one of the unsung heroes of the golden age of television and the 1960s. I met him a number of years before he passed away here in New York at a New York area Emmy event, and they asked about the opening title of Breaking Point, which is a group of aluminum figures that represent people and their frailties. Some of them are rotating on a turntable. I asked him how that was put together. In fact, he told me and the crowd there, yes, he did it. He actually put that thing, that title sequence together, came up with the idea of the aluminum figures and how they would show up on the screen. It's really one of the best opening titles of a television series in the 1960s, with terrific theme music by the great composer David Raskin. If you haven't never seen Breaking Point, check it out. It is a marvelous series. Well acted, well written, well directed, well everything. And again, you wish it could have lasted more than just one season. It really is a buried treasure, and you can find it now on YouTube at YouTube.com. That's YouTube at YouTube.com, which, by the way, is not only available on your smartphone or available on your laptop or tablet. It's also available more and more on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Now, is there a TV show that you like that you feel does not get enough attention? Well, we'd like to give it attention on this program, and all you have to do is let us know. You email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com, and if we use your suggestion on the air, you get the credit. That's right, Y-O-U. So we have to know, and if we do, you can get the credit, all right? So again, it's simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Another way you can let us know about a show you think doesn't get enough attention that you want us to give attention to is on our wonderful website, tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. That's tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. Now, at the bottom of the home screen, there is a question place. And all you got to do is, you know, give us the question, give us the show to know information. Make sure you let us know when the program is on the air, how often it's on the air, what network it's on, and so forth. And again, if we use your suggestion, we will give you the credit. So once again, use that question box at the bottom of the screen. By the way, if you have any questions about the world of television you want us to answer on the program, same thing. Use that question box at tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. That's at the bottom of the home screen. Press it. I'll get it. And use your question on the air and answer it. You, of course, again, get the credit. That's tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. And incidentally, tomorrow will be televised. The words have hyphens between tomorrow will be televised. That's tomorrow will be televised with the hyphens between each word, .onpodium.com. Again, we are waiting for Jack Marathi, the chief executive of the Hardball Channel, other ventures that he wants to do with his organization known as H2O, the streaming network, also known as UMR, Channels Group Media. UMR stands for Urban Music Report. And we are waiting him to come on. So Jack, give us a call. We're waiting for you. We're all set to go. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, and we'll have you on as soon as you make the call, and I see that you're ready to go. We have a big triple header of episodes coming your way next week on Tomorrow Be Televised, which incidentally is also the return in person of NYC Television Week, which will have major events on Madison Avenue here in Manhattan. We will have the Advanced Advertising Summit on Monday. I'll be there for the morning sessions. Then, after I do my show, on Tuesday, the next TV Summit. And then the 20th anniversary edition of one of my favorite events in New York, one of the few of its kind, the Hispanic Television Summit, with my good friend Joe Schramm doing the honors as host and key producer. So that's all coming up. If you want to know more about it, you can go to nyctvweek.com. And on Monday, I'm happy to tell you that our lead guest will be from the new Hulu series, Wedding Season. We'll have the creator-writer Oliver Littleton and the executive producer Brooke Posh. That's creator-writer of Wedding Season, Oliver Littleton, and executive producer, Brooke Posh. In case you don't know, Wedding Season premiered earlier this week on Hulu. It's getting rave reviews. It's a mix of rom-com, thriller, and action-adventure with some nice, promising actors in the lead. So that's coming your way, Wedding Season. That's on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Also, we'll have hopefully a segment on the Emmy Award primetime televised edition that is on that night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, simulcast for the first time on NBC and Peacock. On Thursday, we will showcase a new series that premieres Monday on 16 television stations around the country owned by Scripps. It's called Afternoon Focus. It is a half-hour series daily that showcases people innovating and also inspiring others with what they do. Afternoon Focus will be running between 3 and 6:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern or Pacific time or local time on stations around the country. And we'll have Lorena Ruiz. She's the executive producer of Afternoon Focus. She'll be with us live on our next episode. It'll be on Thursday. That's Thursday, September 15th. We'll be on Monday, Thursday, and Friday of next week, all at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. So check us out then. And on Friday, 1 week from today, we will have the overseer, of another venture that's being done by a station group. It's the smart TV distributed service known as Very Local from the Hearst Television Station. Andrew Fitzgerald is the overseer of Very Local. We'll have him on. And also, we told you about this last week, we'll have the chief executive officer and revenue officer of a very interesting new project called TV Coin. It's an effort to get more new television services on the air through smart TV sets and devices and encourage viewers like you to watch those services right off the bat. Chief Executive Officer Yossi Aloni and Chief Revenue Officer Gustavo Mara will both be with us. That's from TV Coins, which a couple weeks ago received more than $10 million in new investment funding. It's all coming your way on what looks like it'll be a new venture episode of Smart Be Televised. That's a week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Again, we are still waiting for Jack Marafi, the Chief Executive Officer of the Handball Channel and the parent company of that service, known as H2O, the streaming network, also known as UMR Channels Media Group. UMR stands for Urban Music Report. Incidentally, Jack's organization is also, in addition to having that service, has another other service they want to do, including a travel channel called Scram, a food service called Delicious, and a children's channel known as Storytime. The Handball Channel, by the way, promises to carry handball events from all around the world, and they're doing it with a longtime member of the New York State and National Handball Hall of Fame. He is one of the great champions of the sport, Paul Williams. He's been around for 40 years, and he was on the board of the United States Handball Association, and he's former president of the World Handball Council. He will be involved on camera with a series that will be on, I believe, every week called All Things Handball. If you want to know more about Handball Channel, incidentally, we do have a website for you to check out. It's urbanmusicreport.com. It's urbanmusicreport.com, and you'll also find out about the other services that Jack's organization is out to put on the air as well through smart TV sets and devices. As far as I know, the Handball Channel is being carried now or will be carried shortly before the end of the month on Roku, Apple TV Plus, on Verizon's Fios cable systems, and other places as well. Jack, we're still waiting for you to come on. So if you hear us, give us that call, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see you ready to go on, we'll get you on. In case we don't get you on this half hour, we will reset you for sometime next week. All right? All right. So again, while we wait for Jack, let's do another feature that we were going to do in our next half hour. We'll do it this half hour, and that's our regular Friday feature, the Takeaway of the Week, where we highlight a development or two that takes place this week that we think you should take away from as impacting your future of watching television. And our Takeaway of the Week is very simple. It's an epic TV world, after all. Instead of paraphrasing the famous Walt Disney, Disneyland, Disney World exhibit, It's a Small World, and that wonderful song by Richard Robert Sherman, It's a Small World After All. Well, it's turning out it's an epic world after all. Let me explain. Before of August, when people were talking about two of the biggest shows to hit this medium in years, House of the Dragon, Sunday nights on HBO, then replayed on both HBO and HBO Max. I believe, let me see if Jack is now ready to go on the air. Jack, are you there? Hello, come on in. All right, hang up 1 second. Let me see if Jack is on the line. Let's try again. Jack, are you there? Hello, if you're on, say something. Hello. Let me try one more time. Sorry about this, ladies and gentlemen. We're trying, I believe that's Jack on the line. So let's see if we finally have him. Let's try and hope this is the charmer. Hang on. All right, let's see if we finally get him on the air. Jack Marafi from the Handball Channel, are you there? If you're there, speak up. All right, Jack, if you're there, I'm going to drop the line. Give us a call right back, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I hear that you're ready to go on, we will put you on. And again, I apologize to all of you out there. Let's see if this finally does it. Jack Marafi from the Handball Channel, are you there? And for some reason, I'm not hearing anybody. I'll try one last time. Thanks, everybody, for bearing with us. Jack Marafi, Handball Channel, H2O, et cetera. Are you there? All right, I'm going to drop the line. Jack, if you're out there, give us a call back, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see that you're ready to go on the line, we will bring you on the line. All right? So getting back to my thought about House of the Dragon on HBO and The Lord of the Rings, which premiered last week on Amazon, on Prime Video, the big buzz about it was there has to be a war between these two grand epic fantasy series, and only one can win. It will either be House of the Dragon, the prequel to George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones, and a wonderful run. Oh, all right, I'll get back to that in a bit. Let's see if we finally have Jack on. Jack Marafi, Handball Channel, are you there?
No, you've got Alan and Mary Lou here.
All right, Alan and Mary Lou from Teen Kids News. How are you both?
We're great. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. Thank you for calling early. We do appreciate it. And again, I'm sorry that we couldn't get Jack on the line. And we will reset him. We apologize for the technical breakdown he may be having or what may have popped up along the way. So we will have him back on. And let me just say, first of all, last Friday, we brought you a special segment on the 50th anniversary of NACH launching this month on CBS. Reels Channel is doing a special that is running, by the way, on their network next week. And there's another anniversary. For the second straight Friday, we are celebrating another anniversary. Nearly 20 years ago, the head of the person that created Eyewitness News, Al Primer, who was on our program in a special remote that we did from New York University Students with Business, and the person you are hearing right now, Alan J. Weiss, former news director at WABC-TV here in New York and one of the other people who made Eyewitness News happen for many, many decades, started a service, a very interesting service called Teen Kids News, a weekly syndicated show, self-syndicated, most stations playing it on the weekends. This month, Teen Kids News begins its 20th season, and it is one of the most unique syndicated programs ever. Alan J. Weiss, co-executive producer, and Mary Lou Yacoub, who is the producer. Both of you, welcome to our program, officially.
That's great. It's great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
And I want to thank you for the promotion, because I actually only made it up to senior program producer. But if you want to call me a news director, I'm happy to hear that.
Well, and you, by the way, you're an award winner, too, incidentally. And I understand Teen Kids News, along its 20 years, has won a local New York Emmy Award. It's also up for a national Emmy Award.
That's right. Thank you.
Yeah, we're proud of that.
Alan, how did it all come about nearly 20 years ago?
That's a great story. As you mentioned, Eyewitness News is the sort of the touchstone to this whole story. The man who created the concept for Eyewitness News back in the 1960s is Albert Primo. And you have to understand that prior to Eyewitness News, all news pretty much looked the same. It was basically white men with no accent. They came, they had sound like they came from Ohio or someplace, delivering the news. There were no women or hardly any women, very few people of color, if any at all. And Al Primo started off in Philadelphia, actually, looked around and said, we should have a reporting staff that represents the complexion of the people that we report to in our area. And he did that and a couple of other things, such as bringing the reporter into the studio. So the anchor didn't just simply introduce a videotape of the reporter pre-recorded. He would actually be able to, he or she would be able to actually speak to the reporter on set, either before and or after the story. And that created a whole new dynamic for news. And that was then called Eyewitness News. And it was so successful in Philadelphia that ABC brought Al Primo to New York to their flagship station, WABC-TV. And Al Primo instituted Eyewitness News there, that format. Now everybody's doing Eyewitness News, basically. Everybody has people of color. Everybody has back-and-forth conversations between reporters and anchors. So it's kind of lost its distinction. But back in the early 70s, that's what made Eyewitness News. And Al Primo also had an incredible talent for picking people. And one of the people that he picked to go on the air, he had spoken to a young reporter. Her name was Gloria Rojas. She was Latina. And he said to her, "Do you know any young males that are reporters that are Latin or Latino?" And she said, "Well, no, I don't know reporters, but I do know that this lawyer, his name is Jerry Rivers, and I bet you he could be trained to become a reporter. And so Primo met him, hired him, said, look, you got to go to journalism school for 6 months. And he did. He came onto the station, and he became Geraldo Rivera. So with that background, I became a producer at Channel 7 Eyewitness News in the 70s and had crossed paths with Al Primo. He had gone on beyond that to become a bigger executive at ABC, but we were in contact. I ultimately left ABC, Eyewitness News, and so did Al Primo, but we stayed friends. And he came to me one day and said, you know, I was watching the news, and between the attack on 9/11 and the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the news is really scary. And I think what's missing here is a news show for teenagers, but it's not going to traumatize them when they watch it. And I looked at him and said, you know something, Al, that's a brilliant idea, because let me tell you what happened with me. My young daughter, who's 10 years old, came to me and said, Dad, I have some questions about presidents. Can you help me? I said, sure, sweetheart. What do you want to know? I'm great on presidents. Can you explain to me what the story is about President Clinton and the blue dress? And my jaw dropped, and I said, what are you talking about? She says, well, that's what I heard. I said, well, where'd you hear it? Well, I have to watch the news for current events. I said, no, honey. Come home with me tonight. Let's watch my old show. It comes on at 6 o'clock, and we'll watch the news together. So I put her on my lap. We turn on the show, and the pre-show tease says something like, girl held in bondage in a Bronx brothel. And my daughter says to me, Daddy, what's a brothel? And I called Primo up and said, Al, you've got a brilliant idea, because kids cannot watch regular adult news. And that, sorry for the long explanation, but that is the genesis of Eyewitness Teen Kids News, which is now just simply called Teen Kids News.
And Mary Lou, how has this program evolved over 20 years, which incidentally, this is one of the few series that's actually been self-syndicated. I believe you don't have a CBS or Warner Brothers or another major syndicator taking this on, distributing it to various stations around the country.
No, not at all. You're absolutely right about that. Well, we've evolved with the times. We try to keep very current with the topics that we cover, so that teenagers, our sweet spot is 13 to 16-year-olds, will find the show interesting. We have EI, educational and informational stamp of approval on our show, and a lot of stations across the country, that's a benefit to us, because a lot of stations across the country need to fulfill a certain amount of EI programming on their networks, are in their stations, and therefore they welcome Teen Kids News. We also have gotten a lot of feedback, not just from the 13 to 16-year-old age group, but younger kids, as well as some grandparents who absolutely love the show. So it warms our heart to be able to reach that wide a group of people and to just keep current and make sure and that kids are constantly interested or consistently interested.
We're speaking with Alan J. Weiss, the co-executive producer, and Mary Lou Yacoub, who's the producer of Teen Kids News, which this month gets into its 20th season on the air, syndicated in more than 160 stations around the country. It's also carried in thousands of classrooms as well, and it's also carried overseas through the American Armed Forces. That's right, the American Forces Network, all over the world. And when we come back with our guests, who are being live, by the way, joining us from where Teen Kids News produced in Stamford, Connecticut, we'll talk more about the people who have done that series. You might be surprised who their parents are, as well as who they are, and what the 20th season will be like. We'll get back to our guests after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtheradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Today at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, if you love old-time radio that thrills you from the 1940s, check out Erie House, another great radio drama coming your way from the 40s and 50s. That's today, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half hour of this 90-day edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, coming away in vivo from Nueva York on a Friday afternoon. Simon Hammond with you live from Nueva York. Joining us this half hour, we've got the field behind Teen Kids News, entering its 20th season in syndication on local TV stations all over the place this month. We've got co-executive producer Alan J. White, current program producer Mary Lou Akub. They're both with us live from where the show is produced in Stamford, Connecticut. And we want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment about the show and them, give us a call. The number you use is 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up after the top of the hour, we will be going live to Los Angeles, where Pictionary, the new version of the popular game, becomes a new game show this coming Monday, and we'll be speaking live from the set of Pictionary, where they are now taping episodes as we speak, with executive producers David Hurwitz and Richard Brown. That's all coming up after the top of the hour. Alan, in terms of getting this together, what's very interesting is not only the subject you cover, but who is anchoring and who is reporting. And you've had an amazing streak of people who either are siblings of famous reporters and journalists, as well as people who have become journalists after their run on Teen Kids.
That is correct. That also is an interesting story, because originally when we first started the show and we actually did the pilot, we figured that we needed kids that had experience on TV, that could stand in front or sit in front of a camera and be comfortable and could read teleprompter, or at least could be taught to read teleprompter. And so we thought that the place to go would be professionals, to go to kids that already have some sort of an acting experience. So we began to cast actors, and we quickly found out that it didn't work, that kids who came in as actors played the role of being actors, and we couldn't get them to stop being actors and be kids, kind of like the Ted Knight character on Mary Tyler Moore. But you really want to break out of pretending to be somebody and just be themselves. And it didn't work except in one case. One actor, his name is Mwanza Brown. Mwanza played young Simba on Broadway. And he came in and he was a natural. He was Mwanza on TV, not an actor playing a reporter. And so he became our first anchor with Haley. Haley Cohen was our co-anchor. And we began to realize that, you know what, maybe where we need to go, besides opening up to just ordinary kids who just have a desire to do it, but if we can find kids whose family has a connection with TV, they may already be halfway down the road to being comfortable with television. And it worked out really great, because Haley Cohen's mother is Paula Zahn. And then we had Jenna. Jenna's mother is Rosanna Scotto, who is the anchor or talk show host here in the New York area on Channel Fox.
Channel Fox 5, yeah. She's Good Day New York, yeah. And then Gabe is Meredith Vieira's son, who joined our show, I think, in like season 4 or 5. And then most recently, she's been on now for at least 4 or 5 years, is Sol Rivera, Geraldo Rivera's daughter, who also joined the show.
And one of the, going back to the very first two seasons, sportscaster was Cody Gifford, son of legendary Frank Gifford. So it worked really well. The kids came in with a sense of what TV was all about, and they all had great attitudes. They were really a pleasure to work with. There was no difference in the dynamics working with a kid that was just from someone down the block who just wanted to be on TV and had made the audition and succeeded, and then one of these kids who came from a high-profile parent of some sort. So it worked very nicely. Matter of fact, in preparing for this 20th anniversary, we've been interviewing many of the former reporters. You know, they're now adults. Some of them are in their 30s. Some of them are parents already. Many of them are married. And a lot of them say the same thing, that the camaraderie at the studio when we were shooting was terrific, that when they were in the green room, they were playing Xbox together, they were telling jokes and having a good time. So there was none of that pressure or competition that you might expect in a situation like this.
Yeah. I want to go back to how these anchors and reporters have grown up and whether they've stayed in journalism in a little bit. But first, Mary Lou, what is it like putting a typical or atypical program together? How do you put the show together? Do you start with, let's say, do you try to go after the latest news first, or a trend in the news that you can develop that week? How does the format work?
Well, we actually grid our top stories, our leads of the show, for the entire season pretty early on in the year prior to the season, because our show tends to be more topical than it is newsworthy because of the way the show is produced and the schedule that we're on and the way the stations air it. We don't necessarily have breaking news on the program, but we have topical subjects that are of interest to our age group. So we do the research. We figure out what it is, what's important to kids from, you know, what to do to get into college, careers that you don't need a college education for, avoiding internet predators, you know, social media etiquette. I mean, you name it, we cover it on the show. And we tend to lead, as I said, with a top story that's our strongest informational story for this age group. And then we balance the show with other things. Like, we, our motto is to use news you can use, which I believe also came from Channel 7 Eyewitness News. So we want to give our viewers not just information, but information that they can take and then apply to their lives. And for teens, it would be applicable to them. So from cooking tips to we have a segment called Make the Grade, where it's study tips and what to do to help you get ahead in school.
First aid
tips. I mean, like, it really runs the gamut. And then we also try to put some entertainment in it as well. We have a Rising Stars segment that we try to get in many of our shows, where we feature young teens who are trying to make it in the world, usually of music, singers, but some actors, and we interview them and we talk to them about what works, what doesn't, and so it's a mix that sort of always has the news you can use in it, as well as some informational and entertainment. The breaking news is handled because you mentioned earlier that we're also in classrooms across the country. And the classrooms very much like to use our topical stories, but they also like to have current events. So we actually have a deal with Fox News Channel that gives us a prepackaged news of the week segment that's appropriate for kids, for teens. And so that goes into the feed of the show that that is used in the classrooms across the country. So they have the breaking news. They have the actual news coverage, news of the week sort of coverage as well.
But the funny thing is,
news you can use. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alan.
I was going to say the funny thing is that having produced a major newscast for almost 10 years. You begin to realize pretty quickly that stories recycle, even in regular broadcast news. What I mean by that is every year you do a story on, you know, what the Christmas sales are, or how to return a gift, or how to carve a turkey every Thanksgiving, or how to prepare tips for if you're filing for the IRS deadline, how to avoid, you know, summer dangers such as drinking and driving, or over sun exposure. All those are stories that I've covered, or as a producer had in my show at Eyewitness News in New York. So it's not such a reach to be able to create a rundown that looks forward at what's happening, mm-hmm. And be able to be topical. But where, you know, we wouldn't be doing a story right now on the unfortunate passing of the Queen, but we would do a story on why is there a monarchy in England still, you know, after all these years, and you know, what are the pros and cons of something like that. So that's a story we can do a week or two later. We don't have to be on the right now like everybody else is reporting on the death.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mary Lou, what are some of the consumer news stories and rising stars that you've profiled, let's say, over the last year on the program?
Over the last year on the program, hold on, because I got so much stuff in my head from what we've been doing that, let's see, let's go back to, we've done some rising stars on Sorry.
She's running through the rundown. Just give her a second.
All right. So here's a – I don't know if you're going to know any of them, but or maybe your viewers will because they're from all different parts of the country. Zoom, the pandemic has taught us that that's easy to do. So Ava Della Pietra, DJ Lil X, Hello Sister, which is a group of three sisters in Florida, Dustin McCormick, I think he's in Tennessee, a country singer, Madison Taylor Baez, who's a in Los Angeles,
a young singer. Is she the one that blew everybody away by
singing the national anthem?
She's like 10 years old.
Yes.
They brought her out on the field and, you know, full stadium of tens of thousands of people, handed her a microphone, and this girl sang the national anthem and, you know, pun intended, she just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, yeah. Meraki, he's the rapper who, you know, had a very difficult childhood.
Had a drug addict.
And was even in jail and came out of it. The Render Sisters, another sister group from the South. Talia Jackson, she was an actress and a singer, and she was on, what's that show?
Family Ties?
No, more.
Anyway, you get the point.
Yeah.
Since they're rising stars, you haven't heard of them. But, of course, we've done stars. We've done the Jonas Brothers.
When most people hadn't heard of them yet, actually.
That's actually true.
And we've also done BTS, you know, the blockbuster K-pop group. We've done them recently. An interview with them.
We've done a lot of celebrities. You know, that it resonates really well with our audience, and we can bring in celebrities. It's not all, you know, information that you have to, you know, internalize as how to make life better, you know, like another class in school. So it's like the save and vaccine concept with the polio. You don't give it to them as a shot. You give it to them in a sugar cube. So you're getting something good, but you're also getting it in a pleasant way.
Yeah. Do you take the program all at once in one session, or do you do it like certain things throughout the course of a week, and then you get it out to the stations and to the schools?
Well, we work around, you know, since our news team are teens and they go to school, we try very hard to work around their schedules. So we do a lot of the studio rap taping with the anchors and a lot of the reporters during the summer months or vacations and holidays when they're not in school. So that's why the pre-planning is so important in terms of gridding out as much as we can in the season. And then, of course, we have some local because we have some reporters who travel from across the country because they want to be on the show. We've got one of our reporters flies from Seattle once a year to come and do stories. So, and then we have some local kids who we know we can count on to come in around their schedules on a more regular basis. So it's sort of a mix of doing, you know, the bulk of the stuff during school holidays and then some of the stuff on a more regular basis when necessary.
We're talking about Teen Kids News, the self-syndicated weekend program, and many stations carry on the weekends, some carry it on during weekday, and it's now going into its 20th year this month. We're speaking with the co-executive producer, Alan J. Weiss, and producer, Mary Lou Yacoub, and they're both with us live from Stamford, Connecticut this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom, I'm with you live from New York, 78 degrees at the bottom of the hour. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have a triple header of shows coming your way next Monday, Thursday, and Friday at this hour. Coming up on Monday, we'll tell you about Wedding Season. It's the brand new Hulu hit that's becoming a rave with critics and viewers are taking into account. It's a very unique mix of rom-com, thriller, and action-adventure. We will talk to the creator writer of the program, Oliver Lelton, and the executive producer, Brooke Posh. That's Monday, our lead segment, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Alan, you were talking about Eyewitness News in the early days. You mentioned Geraldo Rivera, but there are also other people of color that also made it on that program. Melba Tolliver, John Johnson, many Gloria Rojas, many, many others. How do you do with diversity, especially when you're dealing with teenagers, to give them their shots? And who are some of, by the way, the former anchors and correspondents who have made it since their days on the program?
Okay, Simon, that's a lot in one question. So diversity on Teen Kids News, we take it very seriously. You got to practice what you preach. And therefore, you know, fortunately I came from an experience which there was diversity. not as much diversity as it should have been, no question about that. But Eyewitness News, of all the three major networks in New York City, in my opinion, Eyewitness News was absolutely the most diverse. I'm impressed that you were able to list off people like John Johnson, Melba Tolliver. Melba Tolliver, by the way, got a job in an unusual way. The Union for the on-air talent, we call them talent whether they have it or not, for the reporters and anchors went on strike. And so management looked around and said, is anybody here, this is back in the 60s, anybody here want to be on the air? And Melba Tolliver was, as I understand it, actually a nurse at WABC. And because she was a nurse, she was used to dealing with blood and things like that. She said, yeah, I'm not scared by a camera. I can do it. And they put her on, and she was fabulous right from the beginning. And when the strike was over, somehow or other, they were able to wrangle it so that she stayed and joined AFTRA and became one of the great reporters at Channel 7. Gloria Rojas, who I mentioned already. So having that background of seeing the importance of diversity, when we did Teen Kids News, Al Primo, Mary Lou, and I, you know, we all were in lockstep that this can't just be a bunch of white privileged kids. And therefore, we made the effort. If they didn't come in over the transom, that's a phrase, I think you know it, it's from publishing where it's like unsolicited transcripts come in. If they didn't come in on their own, we actually made efforts to reach out to people and try and find more girls, more people of color, so that we had more of a balance on the show. We're not as good as we should be. I got to be honest about that. Well, I think we can.
We're pretty damn good, actually.
I would like to see a little bit more. Mary Lou, I said.
I mean, come on. I think we've got.
Mary Lou, I also want to point out another Eyewitness News person who was a marvelous journalist and a pioneering one, Gil Noble, who not only did reports on Eyewitness News, but also did one of the first public affairs programs dealing with the issues impacting African Americans and all of us, called Like It Is. And on a very,
That's
very
right.
unique budget, that program was one of the most long-running public affairs show in not only New York television history, but the local television history, period. And still one of the great, great shows of all time, if you ever see the reruns.
And he was a jazz musician. You know, he wasn't his first claim to fame really wasn't as a journalist. And he is actually the first anchor that I ever produced a news show with. Gil Noble was the anchor on the 11:15 actually. At 11 to 11:15 was ABC Network News on Saturday nights, and then WABC came on from 11:15 to 11:30, and Gil was the anchor of that, and I got to work with him as my first anchor. What are you going to say?
I was going to say that not only do we strive to have diversity with our reporters and our anchors, but also in the stories that we cover. It's important to us that we're not just covering, you know, stories about privileged white kids, as Alan put it. So we try really hard to do stories and do positive stories about teens, you know, all across the country that are doing great things in their neighborhoods, in their lives, and bring different cultures to our audience.
You know, one of the interesting things that may be spun off from what you have done over the last 20 years is that we're seeing more and more networks do either series or specials that feature teenagers in unique roles. You see, for example, on programs on Food Network like Chopped and other competition shows, you're seeing more and more episodes or miniseries involving teenagers who cook or who bake, and so on and so forth. We've had in the last year or so CBS doing the Nickelodeon playoff games, which have a special format for them with the slime. Noah Eagle, the son of Iron Eagle, the great CBS sportscaster, and New York Nets, Brooklyn Nets sportscaster, who's done a wonderful job. And more recently, we had the kids cast from the Little League World Series on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, which does a game with top Major League Baseball teams from that site, which was actually put together with kids from Bruce Becks, that's the sportscaster now on WNBC Channel 4. He has a sports camp, and they actually had a teenager who had graduated high school and a youngster who was getting into high school who was like the play-by-play and analyst for that kids cast special episode on ESPN, which I understand got a lot of acclaim.
Yes, you're right. And there's probably a number of reasons for it. I'm going to go to the most mercenary first, at least. And that is, news is, although it's supposed to be this lofty, fair, unbiased, untethered to corporate or financial interests, news is a product, unfortunately, that is not supported by the government, which I guess is a positive from that point of view. It's not supported purely by viewers who send in money. So it is supported by networks that sell advertising time in the show. So there is clearly a financial incentive to make your new show not just as good as possible, but as popular as possible, because the more people who watch your program, the more you can charge for the advertising in the show. So a show that has 1 million viewers can only charge, let's just say, half as much for a minute as a show that has 2 million viewers. It's simple. It doesn't make the show any more expensive. It just means you can sell the advertising. And the golden demographic, now this may have changed, but when I was in news and for a while after that, the golden demographic was 18 to 39. That's what advertisers wanted to reach. Now maybe with the, you know, with the baby boomer generation, which has so much money aging up, now there's a little bit more attention being paid on people in their 50s and 60s. But for the longest time, you wanted that 18 to 39 demographic. They're the ones that are starting households. They're the ones buying new cars, stereos, iPads today, things like that. So it makes sense to expand your show to have teenagers, 18, 19, 17-year-olds, because, A, they're in that demographic, and if they're younger than 18, they're going to be in that demographic. And then brand loyalty. There's all sorts of studies that show that if you started using a particular product, let's just say Tide is your soap product because your parents use it. If you start using Tide in your teenage years, you will probably stay with Tide for the rest of your life. So it's an investment in the future of their audience. And TV right now has been undergoing a lot of changes. TV has been losing viewers because of the internet. So TV has to look into many ways to try and increase that audience. So I'm glad that they're doing it and franchises a whole bunch of people that were not enfranchised. And Al Primo was way ahead of his time when he said, you know, there's no news program that is really by teens for teens. Now ABC has something that you can go online and watch. No, I think it's NBC. I can't tell if it's NBC or ABC. That is a teen-oriented news program. But it's, to my knowledge, not delivered by teens but by adults.
Before I ask Mary Lou one more question about what's coming up this season, after the first episode, this is a look back, look ahead thing, I have to ask Alan about the Eyewitness News thing. When I had Alan on the show, I asked him about it. And to me, the Eyewitness News theme, which is taken from Cool Hand Luke, the tar scene, it's sort of in pieces by the great Lalo Schifrin, who incidentally is still with us. What was it like to use that theme at Eyewitness News? Did anybody think at the time that this was going to be like a groundbreaker in terms of theme music for newscasts?
Okay, couple of things, Simon. First of all, I wasn't there when the decision was made to do that. I was in college and graduated Northwestern School of Medill Journalism and started in 1974. And by then, Eyewitness News was a huge presence. So it was I knew that theme for 3 or 4 or 5 years previously. By the way, in segue to a previous discussion, as I understand the story, it was Gil Noble who recommended that to be the music for Eyewitness News. And it was the most recognizable theme. You could hear that and right away know you're about to see Eyewitness News. And I was rather saddened when it was after I left ABC in the early 80s that they switched away from it. I thought it was so distinctive, but, you know, they do make changes. So.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, check out YouTube for an interview that Lalo Schifrin did about the theme music for Eyewitness News from Cool Hand Luke. What do you hear we have to say about it? It's really great. And you can still hear the theme on YouTube in its original form because they do have it in one way or another. Mary Lou, before we go, what else would you expect beyond the first episode? What are some of the the stories and trends that you'll be following for season 20?
Say that we're going to continue our 20th anniversary celebration for the entire season, because the first show is fully dedicated to it, but in each subsequent show, we will do we are doing profiles with some of the former reporters and anchors. So that we have that to look forward to, and so find out where they are now. And actually, you asked that question, and we didn't answer which ones are journalists. So if you have time and you want us to do that, we will. But some other things that we've got planned, the next couple of shows coming up, I can tell you for sure, we've got a series on college, whether to apply early decision or not, changes in the SAT and ACT tests, topics that are very, very important to teens right now.
Whether you consider international college?
Yes, whether you should consider studying abroad for your entire 4 years of college, or three.
Less money.
Because it costs less money. We are continuing our Make the Grade series, our Kitchen Tip series, our Art Smart series, which are all little series that more of that news you can use. And we have sort of a travel log where we've, thanks to Alan, always getting stories when he goes on vacations. We've got a whole series on different parts of Spain as well as Jordan coming up this season. And we've got a great two-part special story on a place called Fighter's Heaven, which is where Muhammad Ali used to train. That's actually coming up in a couple of weeks. So there's a lot of great stuff to look forward to. I'm just scratching the surface with this.
And I'll tell you what, we have really just cracked the surface, because I'll tell you, there's so much to talk about, and what you both are doing with your production team and with your teenagers, whether on camera or off camera, putting the stories together, it's really very, very special. And I'm thrilled that, personally thrilled, that this kind of program is finding a place on television. And it's really, really marvelous. And, of course, the program is Teen Kids News. It starts year 20 this week, or it may have already started, on more than 160 television stations across the country. Most play it in various weekend time slots. You have to check the local listings not only for where it's playing, but also what time it is playing, because not all stations play it at the same time or the same time period. And if you want to know more about the program and its history, here's where you go online, teenkidsnews.com. That's teenkidsnews.com. In addition to running on local broadcast stations, more than 160, it is also running in thousands of schools across the country. So check your local school to see if they're doing it. And if not, find out how they can get it. And it is also running overseas all over the place, the American Forces Network. Alan Weiss, Mary Lee LeCoupe, thank you both very, very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure. I'll tell you what, because the 20th anniversary is actually next year, let's have you back toward the end of the season. And see how you've celebrated year 20. It's been a great pleasure having you both on.
Thanks, Simon. It's been great talking with you.
Thank you so much.
You really do your homework. Very impressive.
Thank you very, very much. I deeply appreciate that. Thank you so much, Alan. And by the way, Alan, congratulations to you on everything you've done for local news at WABC and elsewhere. It really has been a pleasure to have you on. And Mary Lou, same here. And all the very best with year 20. And have yourselves a fantastic weekend, too.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Alan G. Weiss and Mary Lou LeCoupe from Teen Kids News joining us both live from Stamford, Connecticut. Now, let's get finally quickly wrapping up that takeaway of the week I mentioned about what some people considered or were trying to consider a epic war between the fantasy shows House of the Dragon, which premiered late last month on HBO and HBO Max, and on Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, which premiered last week on before the Labor Day weekend on Prime Video. Well, as it turned out, both shows did super. Prime Video show, 25 million people watched it the first day around the world. And House of the Dragon so far, it's averaging about 10.5 million people watching the first go, which I should say the first day in one way or another on HBO and HBO Max, and then more people down the road every week on HBO Max and HBO at various time periods. What does it show? There's a place for any kind of fantasy show, science fiction show, et cetera. That's the takeaway. No war. Just room for everybody, as long as the show is very well produced. And you should know that House of the Dragon coming back for a second season, and Lord of the Rings already preparing for season two as well. And I have a hunch the spinoff folks, the prequel folks at both places, they're sure preparing more wonderful fantasies. Hopefully they'll do just as good as these two shows have done off the bat and in times to come. When we come back, we're going live to Los Angeles, and we're going to join the executive producers of the new syndicated game show, Pictionary, that premieres next Monday on stations all over the country. Executive producers David Hurwitz and Richard Brown. They will join us live in a break from their taping actual episodes today. Also, we will have some thoughts about one of the best anchormen around. Like I said, it's at the top, an anchor person for all seasons, Bernard Shaw. We'll talk about him as well after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 70 main lists around the world every month and growing. Get caught up on the NFL season that started last night. Bills won big time over the Rams. Incidentally, didn't see the game on NBC and Peacock. NFL 2022 gets your Sunday of NFL action. Week one off to a great start. Tomorrow, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. That's NFL 2022. Tomorrow at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget Best Return 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final 30 minutes of this 90-minute episode of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon. Tom Apple, I'm with you live from New York, 79 degrees, very sunny here in the Big Apple at the top of the hour. And we welcome those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Great guests coming your way in the half hour ahead. Give us a call if you have a question or comment for them. It's Simon App, 646-652-2906. There we go, 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. Don't forget our chat room is biz as well. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, you connect to others as well by using Facebook Timeline. Get on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow those instructions, and other people can be live with you. Coming up Monday, thanks to the folks at Fox First Run and CBS, there's a third version of Pictionary. That's right, Pictionary, the very popular game that's been around since the last 30 or 40 years. Well, there's been two efforts to make Pictionary a regular series in syndication, both lasted a year. Can the third time that starts Monday, hosted by Jerry O'Connell, be a charmer? Let's find out. Joining us live from Los Angeles during a break in taping actual episodes of the program, our executive producers, David Hurwitz and Richard Brown. David and Richard, welcome in.
How are you? Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you.
It is a pleasure, and thank you for making the time on. How has the day gone? You're taping a bunch of episodes. How's it gone so far? We'll start with you, David.
Okay. Well, yeah, today we will wrap up 180 episodes in 6 weeks. We shoot four before lunch and three after lunch, and happy to say that it's just, you know, we've had a really efficient run. It's Pictionary, man, and I don't mean that lightly, but it's the same drawing and sketching game that you play in your living room with the same last-minute guesses and bizarre, horrible drawings that make the whole family laugh, or somebody draws half a stick figure and somebody knows that that's a mailman. So they've been going really well. Jerry O'Connell truly was meant to be a host, as really solid actor that he is, and the amazing career he's had since childhood. His personality drives this show, and for those that had a chance to watch the 20 episodes we did last summer, you got a taste of it. But this guy, we did eight episodes once last week because we had extra contestants, and we knocked it out at the end of the day, and he had the same energy at the end of the day after show eight that he had so on. So that was my long way of telling you that it's going very well.
Richard, did both you and David see the initial runs of Pictionary, the one I think was done like in the late 80s and one in the early 90s? And why do you think this version may be the one that finally is the charmer?
No, we weren't involved in those. David and Noah Bonnet, another very talented executive producer, had the rights to Pictionary, and they actually brought it to Fox and CBS, and of course it was a no-brainer for them. And then I joined after that and sort of helped them. You know, we played with the format, and to your point, looked at other versions of the show and thought, okay, how can we modernize it? How can we sort of up the tempo while still keeping it that fun family game that obviously everyone knows and loves? And I think we've, you know, I don't know if you had a chance to see any of the 20, as David mentioned, that we did last summer, but the show, it flows so well. It's, you know, and watching the episodes down for the edit, I've never worked on a show that goes by so fast. It's, as David mentioned, it's, it, it works so well because I think, you know, when I leave every day, and this isn't me just saying this, you know, we say goodbye to the celebrities that are on for that particular day, and everyone says the same thing. They can't wait to come back. They want to play it again. They wish that we could have shot another seven that day. And I think, you know, it's that kind of energy is contagious, and I think we'll really bleed through when people watch the show. It is a fun family party game, and as David touched on, Jerry has just been the perfect host because, you know, as you well know, hosting a game show is tough enough. There's mechanics, there's, you know, your traffic copping, there's rules to follow, you're basically a producer there on stage. He's able to do all that while also making it feel like it's a party in his basement, in which, you know, we have two celebrities and then four fun contestants. So I think that the energy and the fun has just been super contagious. And I, even though we've done 176 of these so far, I'm excited to watch it on TV. So now I think it'll definitely translate.
I could add to what he just said for you there. It's like, you know, you look at the old show and it's drawing and guessing. And we were still doing drawing and guessing. And Noah Barnett and I, when we pitched this to Stephen Brown at Fox First Run, Stephen oversees 25 words or less. He oversees You Bet Your Life. He's overseen a million game shows, and he's also a game show producer. So he had the great producerial instincts to put us in the right direction. When we reach out for Richard to be a part of this show, Richard helped come up with some mechanisms to help draw the game. All four rounds are drawing and guessing. But, you know, round one has two celebrity captains with each team with two friends, and they're drawing and guessing under a category headline. And if they don't get it in 15 seconds, which is much quicker than the 60-second egg timer you play with at home, so the stakes are naturally raised. And you could steal it if you can make out what the other chicken scratch was. And then Richard came up with this really great mechanism in round three of our show where each team at a commercial break is shown five words in which they choose three for the other team to draw. So there's this great strategy based on what you learn. So for the viewer, it's all drawing and guessing, but each round is elevated not only by points, but with also the strategy that comes into play. And then the final team, that makes it to the final round with the most points, they have 45 seconds in which one of their drawers picks three words for them to draw that they don't know, and they just go for it. So it's a lot of drawing and guessing. So that's the simple fun of one of the world's most popular games. And another great added thing for the viewers on not only Pictionary, but also 25 words or less, and You Bet Your Life. And in many markets, they're all going to play back-to-back or split times during the day. Pictionary's on in many markets back-to-back. And then it's also on as early as 10 a.m. and then again at 7 p.m. that night. But viewers should have their smartphones ready because with all these shows, you scan the QR code. It drives you to a very gettable question on all three shows. I mean, you might miss it, but it's a great opportunity to be entered into a daily sweepstakes. You could play every day and win from home, and you could keep winning from home. So it's a great thing that Fox First Run and these different shows are doing to really get the viewers not just yelling at their screens like Mark Goodson and always said, the sign of a great game show is people yelling at their screens. You're definitely going to be yelling at your TV during Pictionary because you will be guessing along with everybody, but you could also play from home, and that's a really great aspect as we make, you know, television more interactive these days.
Yeah, and it allows, you know, as David said, the people at home to join the party, and that's something that we really wanted to do, right, is we have these great celebrity guests, and obviously we have really fun-loving contestants who are Pictionary-obsessed. But the home game has been a really cool element because, you know, while you're watching, it gives you the chance to scan the QR code and do exactly what you just saw the teams doing and get a chance to win some really cool stuff. So I think that interactive nature as well sort of takes it above and beyond and makes it an awesome format.
And we are interacting this half hour with David Hurwitz and Richard Brown. They are the executive producers of Pictionary, the new game show hosted by Jerry O'Connell, begins on Monday, either one half hour or two half hour shows back to back. They'll be running on more than 100 stations around the country, including Fox television stations like WNYW, I believe, here in New York, and other stations around the country, starting on Monday. The both of us live from Los Angeles. They're with us on a break. They are taping episodes today. That'll be coming your way later in the season. And they're with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Some of them with you live from the other side of the US of A, New York, 78 degrees, the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for David and or Richard, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Triple Header episode week coming your way next week, Monday, Thursday, Friday. And on Monday, we'll bring you the writer and executive producer of the new acclaimed Hulu series, Wedding Season. It's a mix of rom-com, action-adventure, and thriller. Creator-writer Oliver Lightenson and executive producer Brooke Posh, they'll be joining us as our lead guests. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Richard, what did you and David see from the test run last summer, Pictionary, that you applied as here's how we have to do a full run the best way possible?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really fun exercise for all of us. I mean, we're very proud of those 20 episodes that we put together. But I think the first thing was sort of finding, you know, Jerry's voice. And obviously everyone knows Jerry O'Connell, and he's got a great energy and you know, super affable guy. But I think a big part of that was realizing, okay, this is the kind of host that he's going to be, which sort of what I touched on before, he's driving the game. He does a great job of kind of policing everything. But also, I think it's fair to say he has a bit more fun with the contestants than is typical, you know, whether it's like very lightly, you know, poking fun of a drawing or, you know, coming back with a callback 15 minutes later for one of our, our contestants. And just kind of seeing the way that he bonded with our contestants and celebrities and sort of created that party atmosphere, that was something that we said, okay, we want to push that even further. And then we made some game adjustments to our final, our end game, based on what we learned, based on what was translating. You know, as you're well aware, you sit in a studio for 3 weeks and you do something, and then it's not till you're kind of watching it back on your TV that you say, oh, okay, as a viewer, my takeaway is a little bit different than maybe I had anticipated when formatting the show or producing it. So we made some minor changes to our end game to make it a bit more viewer friendly and a bit more allowing the viewer to guess a bit more than we had before. We were telegraphing the answers in our end game, and that was a fun change that I think has worked really well for us. But I think a lot of it was really just kind of watching down the, you know, it's when you've got seven people on stage in a show that, you know, is really only 19 and a half minutes, it is really all about those relationships. And so I think that was a big takeaway for us. And you know, even before we started this season, we did a bunch of run-throughs with Jerry, who's willing to drive anywhere to rehearse. He's, you know, because he's got that actor's mindset. So for us, it was really saying, okay, how can we elevate that? And really, you know, 19 and a half minutes isn't much time, and you've got to service two celebrities and 16 drawings in each episode. So really kind of finding ways to incorporate our contestants even more, and Jerry's been so great at pulling fun things out of them. So from a game format perspective, there were some minor tweaks and changes based on what we learned. And, you know, the first act, we made some slight tweaks to that to kind of get into some of the drawing faster, because, you know, that's what everybody's there to see. And then some tweaks to the end of the show. But really, you know, it was just about getting Jerry to a point where, you know, it's crazy. I'm in the truck talking to him. There are some episodes when I only have to interject two or three times because he just goes off on a roll and is able to kind of bond with everybody and police the action. So it was really just working with him.
Mm-hmm. David, there are a number of mechanics, as you know, in making a game show happen. One of the most interesting is pairing celebrities with contestants. To make sure they understand not only how to play the game, but also to work for the contestant, not just themselves. The other mechanic is the actual subjects that they draw. How do you work those two separate mechanics and make the show go?
Well, again, everybody knows Pictionary. So it's something that we were mindful of, but we quickly learned last summer that it wasn't a hurdle that needed to be overcome. Many times, different shows I've done, when you bring celebrities on for the celebrity version, they're afraid to not look smart. They're afraid to lose big money for the contestant. If I answer wrong, I'll feel horrible that they lost their chances, $100,000 on a big primetime show. What we have here is people playing Pictionary, and the celebrities get out there, and they draw first in each round, which means they're never the one coming up in the bottom of the ninth with two outs, because you want to put them in the position to be the leadoff hitter and set the table and not strike out in the bottom of the ninth inning. You want to put them in the best position to help and never to hinder, and that's based on, you know, the experience I just mentioned. And then in the end game, the losing team celebrity joins the winning team celebrity on the other couch to help that team win, but the team must draw. The celebrities aren't drawing. So the team must draw themselves to success, and they've got two celebrities who are comfortable being on TV helping them win the cash and the trip. So that's how we make little adjustments so we never put them in the wrong position to, you know, somebody go, oh, I was watching and I can't believe that Jaleel White had that person lose. And so that's the one way. The other way, as far as the content, you know, when we do a game show, you can't put a show together in particular order for any celebrities or contestants, because that's against FCC rules. So what we might do is when we realize The Miz is on the show and he's a wrestler, to not have wrestling categories. Or we had an American Ninja Warrior or a Ninja Warrior answer, and we made sure not to have that when Matt Eisenman or Akbar were on the show. So that's well in advance. But on the day, everything in Pictionary, you know, it's everything from words that start with H to things in a schoolhouse to words that end in ball. So you have a basic idea. So you're not, it's not double jeopardy where, oh my God, it's ancient Rome. So that's how we make it a more pleasant viewing and user-friendly experience for both the celebrities, the contestants, and the viewers.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, just joins in the chat room. Rick, you have a question, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 049. By the way, on the first week of shows next week, some of the people mentioned Jaleel White from Family Matters. He's on. Melissa Peterman, who has also hosted a game show, as a matter of fact, she's on. Carson Cressy, one of the original people from Clear Eye for the Straight Guy. The duo from Entertainment Tonight, Kevin Frazier and Michelle Turner are on. Actor Vanessa Mitchell, one of the Real Housewives, I think Eva Marcella's on. There's an Olympian or two on. So there's quite a few interesting, Orlando Jones, wonderful comedian actor. There's a lot of very interesting people who, some of whom are doing a game show for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, our celebrities are, you know, where they're coming from and their experience either playing games or, you know, whether they've done this thing before. It's so diverse. And that's what's been really fun is, you know, each episode, each week, as we mix up these pairings, you know, no two episodes feel the same. And that's been really great. And as David mentioned, like a big part of that too is because our content is randomized, you know, each day it's like spinning a giant wheel. And like, you come in and you watch and you say, okay, in this episode, it's, oh, Jerry's wife, Rebecca Romaine, is joining us, and Rebecca Romaine is playing against Jaleel White. And, you know, this category is things you'd find in Hawaii. There's this amazing, you know, random element to the show, to putting it together, where we really, you know, no two episodes feel the same, and been able to kind of keep us on our toes as far as we've been. It's been a really fun experience. And with only a few more left to shoot.
Yeah. David, how has the pandemic hit things, or the end of the pandemic hit things? In the last couple of years, we have seen game shows taped either through Zoom, as 25 Words or Less was, in some cases without a studio audience, so they've had to use a laugh and applause track, like Family Feud, or in the case of Price is Right or Let's Make a Deal, with a smaller audience, and in some cases, in the case of Let's Make a Deal, using a Zoom crowd. How have you done Pictionary? Do you have a full audience watching? Is it a small audience? How has that, you know, impacted the way the show goes?
Yeah, it's definitely changed how you feel when you wake up in the morning. So on a 7-show day, we have, you know, 7 shows worth of teams of 2 and backups, and they get tested that morning. They all need to be, you know, vaccinated and boosted. And they come in, and sometimes they call and say they're not feeling well, so you know you're going to be using your alternates, but then you got to find extra alternates. So we have emergency people on standby. We shoot in the San Fernando Valley, so people that we know could drive against traffic and get here in time for the afternoon tapings. So you're prepared. It is, you know, when you're doing 180 episodes that have 6,000 words and 720 contestants, it's a Sisyphean challenge, if I said that correctly, Greek mythology teacher. But it's impacted us greatly in that usually somebody might not show up because they got a flat tire or, you know, they had to travel on business. So every day you're playing a little game of whack-a-mole. I also just got done doing 180 episodes of You Bet Your Life. And the first one season we shot last summer, last spring, more in the throes of the middle of the pandemic. And I had a bigger attrition rate now here on Pictionary and on this season of You Bet Your Life because people are out and about more and there's, you know, no more masking. So it's caused us to look at not only the 720 people to be on the show, but to continue casting through the last day. We had people fall out this morning and we were able to bring in backups as opposed to that coming up once in a while pre-pandemic when you can easily know that your alts will be standing by. And if they're not in today's show, they'll be in tomorrow's show as regulars. So it's become a huge game of whack-a-mole. It affects the budget, of course. You know, we're all masked. We are all tested multiple times a week. We all have to check in every morning. And so it's added to the budget, but the show must go on. As far as the audience, I learned this from our friends at Wheel of Fortune, and it's helped with the gameplay, is we put that day's contestants in our audience. So they end up being your audience. At You Bet Your Life, I had a small audience of 25 people. Here, because it enhances the gameplay, we have them watch because you continue to learn how to draw differently the more you see it played. The same way if you played Pictionary five nights in a row, you'd be better on night two. So it's really up the level of our gameplay by having that day's contestants sit and be our audience. But I would, if Jerry is so fantastic, and I know it sounds like Richard and I are picking up you know, free dinners and side money from him, the way we're glowing about him. He is so good that I looked at the producer on the floor I sit next to after he said something hilarious earlier. And I was like, imagine if we had 100 people here, how raucous this place would be, because it's just so funny when you make fun of your own drawing, when they're trying to draw an airplane and the person's yelling, you know, sandcastle. I mean, there's so much callback humor. This show is built for laughs, and Jerry drives those laughs. I hope that we get a season two, and I hope even if I had just 50 people in the audience for a day, it would raise the level of entertainment. It'd become a whole new character in the show. But that's my answer to how we've had to adapt to this, you know, during pandemic world of television production.
Before we let both of you go and get your taping done for the day and the week, I understand, David, you have your own production company. What are the shows you're working on that you can talk about?
Yeah, well, currently, you know, things slowed down because of the pandemic. I was fortunate enough to sell You Bet Your Life with Jay Leno, and it was actually while Jay and I were doing Zooms with Stephen Brown with all of the Fox affiliates that I presented Pictionary to Stephen, just seeing what an astute gamesman he was. And that's why we were fortunate enough to bang that out for last summer. And here we are. I've got a couple things I can't talk about coming up until the ink is dry. But it's all in, you know, I've done everything from Fear Factor to The Man Show to American Gladiators to studio game shows. So it's safe to say everything that I do work on has some kind of competition aspect. You know, these shows are great. You bang out seven a day as opposed to spending a few days to get a show. And I think the way the business model is changing, you need more shows that could gang, shoot, and amortize. So that's where my attention's going to. And I'm lucky enough to know people like Richard Brown. I feel lucky to have Richard, my partner and I, Noah, to have Richard with us, because if you Google him and you see that he's a primetime producer, and for him to bring that acumen, it's a lot like you're getting a Division I guy playing for your Division III lacrosse team. And so, and that's across the board, just the people that both Richard and I were able to attract to come execute this show. I think it shows in the finished product. And I think when your listeners start to check the show out, like I said, they'll be screaming at the TV and they'll appreciate it because we didn't overdo it. We brought you Pictionary. We didn't gild the lily, so to speak. It's just we came up with fun mechanisms to make it a horse race. And I will tell you, when people make a guess at the buzzer, when we have a full set of people in the audience, you know, when we have about, you know, 28 strong in the morning and someone does a guess like that, you'd think Steph Curry hit a three-pointer. The emotion and laughter of this show, it's really, really infectious. And as we watch these shows in the edit, it's really great to see that the energy on stage does transfer to the edit, which means it's going to go home to all your listeners really well.
Pictionary returns in syndicated television this Monday on more than 100 stations around the country in daytime syndication. Check your local listings for where and how. It will include the local Fox stations like here in New York, WNYW New York. And by the way, the second season of You Bet Your Life with Jay Leno also begins its second season. Also on the Fox stations and other places around the country, too. More details about the program online. By the way, any possibility of a Pictionary website? I know Mattel, if you want to find out more about Pictionary, the whole thing, Mattel, of course, the parent that made Pictionary happen, Mattel.com. Is there going to be a website for the game, for the show?
There is, yes. Go to PictionaryOnTV.com, and that's going to be your one-stop shop, PictionaryOnTV.com. It has information. If you want to apply to be on the show, you can do that there. It'll also instruct you about some of the home games we have, and as we mentioned before, some of the fun ways that viewers can play interactively and win some prizes and all that fun stuff. So PictionaryOnTV.com will tell you when it's on in your local area and also how you can get some fun prizes.
That's PictionaryOnTV.com. Again, Pictionary begins its first of hopefully many seasons on Fox stations, other places around the country, in daytime syndication. Check local listings for where it is in your area and what time as well. David Hurwitz, Richard Brown, thank you both very, very much for taking time out of a very hectic taping day to be with us. All the very best starting Monday for hopefully your first season and hopefully many, many more. Pictionary finally has the charm of becoming a hit.
Really appreciate it. Thank you for the invite.
Yeah, thanks for the time. Thanks so much. Look forward to what you think of
the
show.
You're very welcome, David Richard. Take care. Have a fantastic weekend. Our best to Jerry and the crew.
All right, we'll pass it on. Thank you, sir.
Richard Brown,
bye.
David Hurwitz joining us live from where Pictionary is being taped in Los Angeles. Unfortunately, we are running out of time, so we're going to have the Bernard Shaw tribute on Monday's episode. And I promise you, it will be full and very heartfelt because Bernard Shaw was one of the very best anchor people I have seen in my life. He was the gold standard, as far as I'm concerned, for what he did at CNN and before as a correspondent with CBS and ABC. That's our program for today. Thanks to all of our guests for being here and all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, on Monday, we will have the people from Hulu's new series, Wedding Season, on Monday's episode. Came in late on today's program. Want to catch up with you? Go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/tell-us. Check out our podcast over the weekend. And we'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, all of our podcast destinations, and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. The views expressed are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Andy Toe is BTR General Manager, Dave Sonnenberg, Head of Content. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We are back on Monday. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our podcast and website affiliates. Whatever you need now and then, please make it safe and make it great. And until the next